Good morning, Silver City and Grant County. You are listening to Earth Matters on your Gila Membrace Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. The New Mexico Wilderness Alliance is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection, restoration, and continued enjoyment of New Mexico's wildlands and wilderness areas. On today's program, we have Denise Smith, Terry Timmy, and Mike Sauber, all of whom work at the Office of Sustainability here in Silver City. Welcome to Earth Matters.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you.
It's great to have you guys on. I should also note that, Denise, you are the director of the Office of Sustainability. Terry is a planner with recycling and special projects. And Mike is a planner for energy efficiency and renewable energy. The Office of Sustainability is part of the Community Development Department. It's located at 1106 Pope Street, the City Hall Annex, and its mission is to promote community resiliency. As someone who recently moved to Grant County almost 2 years ago, I was hoping that you all could give us and our listeners a brief overview about all the great work that you guys do at the Office of Sustainability, what your mission is, how you got your funding, how you got started, and what you really do for this great community in Silver City and Grant County.
Thank you, Nathan. The Office of Sustainability started about 5 years ago with grants from both the CBDG and the Department of Energy. And these were funding through the American Recovery Act, the ERA funding. So we were able to get started with a full staff, including a staff of energy auditors who provided the Energy Sense program to residents in Grant County. So we were started as an office that would be able to save the town energy and money and also develop renewable energy projects. And we have done quite a bit of both of those. The Energy Sense program, we were able to go into over 800 homes in Grant County and give them some low-cost energy retrofits like CFL light bulbs, low-flow shower heads, faucet aerators, and some caulking around windows if it was needed, or weather stripping around doors. And this resulted in some savings. Terry, what did we estimate that the houses were saving maybe per year?
Up to $15,000 a year.
For the 800 plus.
Energy and natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's really great. I lived in Albuquerque for about 22 years, and I don't even know if Albuquerque has an Office of Sustainability. To know that Silver City has one and Grant County has one is fantastic. And when did the office actually start running?
It was 2010.
2010. So mm-hmm. Now you're 5 years in, and you feel like things are going pretty well. It sounds like those numbers are excellent. And then I'm going to imagine that you're still doing those types of things in terms of offering homes, affordable?
Well, that grant ran out, unfortunately, and I keep trying to look for more funding to do that program again, but I haven't found the funding for it. But we did put in a solar array at the wastewater treatment plant. And Mike, can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, as part of that initial ERA funding, that allowed us to delve into some money-saving things that the director at the time, Nick Cicillo, heard about what's called a power purchase agreement from the city of Santa Fe, Nick Schiavo, whose office of sustainability up there. And a power purchase agreement is basically allows a municipality to, without any investment, to have a solar system and pay a lower solar electric rate. And that's because since municipalities don't pay taxes, they can't get tax benefits, but individual entities, corporations can. And so that makes it possible for a corporation, some other third-party entity to build and own, to fund
mm-hmm.
a system, to find the funding, to get the rebates, to build the system and maintain it. And the city has no responsibility other than what they signed on a 20-year contract is to buy electricity from this entity. So the city ends up paying a lower amount for electricity, and we have no responsibility for maintenance or anything of the solar array. And that's what we did at the wastewater treatment plant. It's a 1 megawatt, which it covers around 5 or 6 acres of land. and that powers 80% or so of the power at the wastewater treatment plant of its needs.
And we're going to save a bunch of money over that 20-year period.
Estimated $2 to $4 million over the 20-year contract
period.
Wow,
that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing that came up when I was researching you guys is this community forestry plan. In 2013, the Office of Sustainability created a community forestry plan. Can you tell us a little bit about that, what that looks like, and how you're implementing it?
Sure. The community forestry plan was funded by the State Forestry Department, and it was so that Silver City could get an idea of what our urban forestry resources are. And so during the planning process, I did an inventory of all the trees on town-owned land. And I got help from retired arborist Elroy Limmer and also with the Aldo Leopold High School students. The inventory only covered the number of the trees, the species, how big they were, and not the age or condition of the trees. But through the inventory, we realized that most of the trees in Silver City are on privately owned land, while the town-owned trees are in there's 17 parks, the golf course, the visitor center, the library, and the museum. And there's a few street trees, very few street trees. There's a few along 6th Street by the school, and there's a couple along Bullard on the upper and the lower ends of Bullard. The plan has recommendations on how to maintain the trees that we do have in good condition, and there's a lot in there about educating the public. And it also recommends that we do a more in-depth inventory to look at tree health and condition.
You mentioned the trees on Bullard. I've always thought it would be great if we could have a whole bunch more trees lining the sidewalks, or just take the sidewalks out and put native trees down the street. Is that something that could actually happen?
You know, it would really look nice, but no, we don't have the room, really. You know, we have the concrete sidewalks all the way down and the very high concrete sidewalks at some points. And so it's not feasible to plant more trees along Bullard, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
But we do have the advantage of being right next to the big ditch. And
that's
all of those trees are beautiful down there.
That's true. And now, is that city property?
That is. Part of it. I mean, just really from college down to Broadway is owned by the town.
Okay. And in the plan, there's also a reference to non-native trees, such as invasives like Siberian elm and the Tree of Heaven. Why are these trees a problem, and is there anything we can do about them?
Well, we found that like 75% of the town-owned trees are non-native. And they're mostly Siberian elm and Tree of Heaven. In fact, 40% of all the trees were Siberian elm. So these trees
Say that percentage again?
40%.
40%.
Were elm. And these trees are considered invasive because they tend to take over and they crowd out the native trees. They also decrease the diversity of species. And so it's really hard to control them, even if you use herbicides, which is not something I would encourage anyway. And lack of diversity in any ecosystem is also a problem. If you have a dominance of one or two species and they were to get some kind of a disease or something happened to them, you could lose all of your trees at once. So what can we do about them? Well, one option is you could cut them all down. And, you know, that would really seriously compromise the canopy cover that we do have. And it's likely the trees would just come back again. So a better option is to create more diversity by selectively removing some of the non-natives on a small scale, planting natives where there's a good chance of survival, you know, where they can be watered and taken care of.
Right.
And my training as a wildlife biologist taught me in the past to do whatever it takes to remove non-natives, replace them with native trees. And there's been millions of dollars spent all over New Mexico, a lot of it on salt cedar eradication. But I've really come to understand that the non-native trees, they still provide habitat. They provide shade, oxygen, and they're likely there because the conditions have changed so much that favored the native trees. So I don't really think of them as the bad guys anymore.
Now, this might sound like kind of a silly question, but why are trees important and what are the benefits that they give to us?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that because trees are awesome. They provide shade, windbreaks. They can create visual and sound barriers. They hold the soil in place on the land. They turn what we exhale into oxygen, helping keep us and all creatures that breathe oxygen alive. They provide shelter and food for a lot of critters, and they're aesthetically pleasing. They increase property values. Studies have shown that they improve mental and physical health. There's less crime in treed areas. All in all, the benefits are incredible, even though some of them are hard to measure.
You said there's less crime in tree areas?
That's what studies say.
That's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I know that I work on wilderness, and obviously I'm out in the woods all the time, and I can tell you the benefits of trees for me are solace and solitude and all those things. So,
right.
Absolutely. Another thing that I saw, you guys got a grant, I think, for a fruit tree planting project that Kendra Milligan from the Grant County Commission Health Council is working on. And how does that relate to the work of the Office of Sustainability? It sounded like there was this concept of having public fruit trees for people.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's pretty exciting, really. The Health Council and the university worked with a local anti-hunger activist to map the existing fruit trees. And they realized that there's really a need to have more fruit trees available to the public. So the Health Council got a grant. They're going to plant up to 20 fruit tree orchards on public land here in Silver City and in the mining district. So they'll also be in Hurley, Santa Clara, and
Bayard,
thank you. And ideally, the orchards would be located in areas where there's low access to fresh fruit and areas that are reporting high hunger rates. Kendra plans to organize neighborhood groups that will help plant the orchard and take care of it. And there'll be annual pruning and harvesting days. So if you want to be a part of this in your neighborhood, you should get a hold of Kendra. And about the same time that I heard about Kendra's project, I found out that Claire and Van from Stream Dynamics were getting a grant to do up to 80 water harvesting basins on town-owned land. So I thought, why not plant fruit trees in some of these water harvesting basins?
Makes sense.
Yeah, give them a better chance of survival. So as it turns out, there was also a grant opening with the State Forestry Department to get funding to help implement the community forestry plan that I'd done. So I applied for funding that to provide education about the benefits of trees to these neighborhood orchard groups. So as they meet, I'll also be there talking about how great trees are.
Now, you said there's going to be 20 orchard sites. Is that what it is?
Yeah. And we're not sure if she can get all 20 done because we're in that planning process right now. That was her dream at the beginning. So we'll see what happens. Her first project is going to be over at 6th Street School here
in
Silver City.
And when do you guys expect this to sort of start? I know you said you're in the planning process, but when do you expect to start actually planting the trees?
I believe Kendra's going to do her first orchard here in the spring.
In the spring of this year?
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wants to get more information and get involved, they just need to contact Kendra Milligan at the Grant County Community Health Council?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Do you have contact information for them at all?
I'm sorry, I don't at the moment.
That's perfectly okay.
Another interesting tree project that we were involved in was with the Arbor Day Foundation and Trees New Mexico and PNM. And last year we gave away over 500 trees, one per person. So you can imagine there was a big crowd of people lined up at our office on a Saturday morning. And we hope to do that more of that in the future.
That's
there was a
fantastic.
Tremendous response to that and a lot of demand for that in the future.
That's fantastic. And just quickly before we go to a quick break, can you give us a sense of what kind of fruit trees they're looking to plant? Do you know?
I think that she's still in the planning process on that, so I can't tell you for sure.
Apples, please.
Yeah, apples. I mean, there's going to be a lot of possibilities.
Great. You're listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. We'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm a Gila grassroots organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we have Denise Smith, Terry Timmy, and Mike Sauber, all of whom who work at the Office of Sustainability here in Silver City. Welcome back to Earth Matters, and thanks for joining us again today. We were just talking about the community forestry plan, and I want to stick with you, Denise, on something called a parklet at the Office of Sustainability. What is a parklet, and what do you have planned with that?
Well, a parklet is a little park. But the Office of Sustainability got a grant from PNM to create a little parklet in front of our office building. And as you know, our office building is an old gas station. So, I want to turn that into a small educational space that we'll be inviting to sit in, relax. And so one of the first things I want to do is paint that canopy to look like a tree canopy. So the top part will look like the tree canopy, and then the posts coming down will look like the tree trunks. And then I'm going to put in some water harvesting off of that roof so that we'll have some rain barrels. And we'll have a few small bushes, plants, and things like that, probably in containers since we're on a concrete lot or asphalt lot, to just, you know, bring some aesthetically pleasing plants into the area. And then the space is going to be defined by a few short walls made out of adobe and straw bale, and to show examples of alternative building materials. And these will be built with community help through workshops on how to build with adobe and straw bale. And there'll be a couple of benches to sit on. There'll be a bicycle rack. And then there'll also be some educational kiosks about passive solar, house design, water harvesting, recycling, things like that.
That's really exciting. You guys are doing all kinds of cool stuff. I wish I'd heard about you earlier. You got grants for energy audits for small businesses in the four-county area. What are energy audits, and why is there such a need for energy audits?
Well, I'm actually working on the grant right now, so we don't have it. I have to turn it in today. So right after I get done with this, I'm going to be going and finishing up that grant application. And it's a grant for energy audits for small businesses in a four-county area. And it's a four-county area because this is part of the regional strategic plan that was done by the Green Jobs Task Force. It was finished last year, but the Green Jobs Task Force was formed by Senator Bingaman, and it's being carried on by staff with Udall and Heinrich's office. The energy audits would be looking at the building, first looking at electric and gas bill to see where the energy use is and if there's any trends that can identify the high usage. And then an energy auditor looks at all the appliances, the equipment, and stuff in the building that use energy, and they'll put together a list of ways to reduce the energy use. They'll also calculate the return on investment or how long it takes to get the money back that you put into these improvements and start saving money. And why is there a need? Well, energy audits identify these cost-effective energy-saving measures. If they're pursued by businesses, the businesses can reduce their operating expenses, they can increase their profits, and increase the value of their building. And then they can put that savings back into the local economy, which would really provide needed stimulation for our depressed economy in this region.
And that kind of leads into my next question for Mike. I understand that you're working on several solar energy projects around town, such as electric vehicle charging in queue, solar PV for Gabby Well, and monitoring energy use in buildings owned by the town of Silver City. Can you give us a little intel on that and how exciting that is and what you're working on?
Yeah, actually, the electric vehicle charging stations will not be specifically solar powered, although one will be located at the solar parking structure at the visitor center parking lot. And this is, once again, a grant that we've applied for. We don't know yet if we'll get that, and that's through Freeport MacMoran. So electric charging stations would allow people with electric vehicles to come to their area, and if they plug in to charge, it takes a little while to charge. They'll walk around town in the process spend money locally. So right now, the closest charging station is in a commercial one of any kind is in Las Cruces.
Wow.
So having one here would allow people to actually to come to this area. And electric vehicles are definitely going to be the way of the future. I mean, the internal combustion engine after 100 years is still only 20-30% efficient at the most. And that's if you're not sitting at a stop sign parked, idling. So electric vehicles, you know, battery technology is just screaming forward right now. A lot is happening in battery technology, and as we scale up producing batteries, the price is going to come down quite a bit. And so the technology and you know, having a longer range and everything is going to be increased. So anyway, overall, the EV charging stations would help the local economy just by allowing people to come here. And it would also allow the local dealerships to become EV dealers as well, which they can't if, obviously, if there's no
right, no place to charge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of the number of electric vehicles that might be being sold in the state of New Mexico, or at least in this area?
I have no idea right now. No.
Isn't there a electric vehicle manufacturer in New Mexico? Did that ever happen? The Tesla factory, or did that not? That didn't go through, did it?
They decided to move to or set up a plant in Nevada, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So if we had some more of these charging queues, then that also might help bring some more business, like you were saying, to New Mexico.
Yeah.
Well, in lieu of not having that at the moment, we also have this bicycle route master plan, which is another way, great way to get around without using fossil fuels. What is the intent of the bicycle route master plan, Mike?
Basically, the plan will assess what our current situation is here now. You know, how is the infrastructure? How is it that kids are able to get to school and adults? You know, how safe they feel, and change whatever is necessary to increase the use of bicycles and walking, pedestrian use, and it's basically the complete streets formula where you know. Currently, the needs of pedestrians and bicyclists are not generally included in plans enough. And Silver City has done a fair amount already towards signage. And probably people have seen on the roads what they call sharrows, which little arrows with a symbol of a bicycle. And that means that the lane at that moment should be shared with bicycles, vehicles. Bicycles are legally allowed to be on the roads and are supposed to be on the roads, actually. So we currently have a handful of bike lanes. Little Walnut has an excellent bike lane going out quite a ways. That needs to be completed. That will be one of the priorities is completing Little Walnut further out, hopefully eventually to the Little Walnut picnic grounds at the end. But if it city limits go up to around Kane Drive, and if it went up to Kane Drive and then on Swan Street, the three of those would allow people to have an exercise loop that they can do, and also a corridor, you know, to get to school on the various schools and the locations there.
Now, has anything been done to improve the safety for bicyclists who ride on the streets? I know you mentioned those bike lanes, but has there been anything else done to help improve safety?
There is a group that has organized a bicycle, what's the term, a community gets together and they all ride bicycles together, the adults and the children go to school together, and then the adults ride home, and there's usually one at the lead and one at the back end, and just trying to get
people
used to seeing, you know, people and kids specifically on bicycles and allowing them to increase their health, their mental alertness at school, you know, decrease diabetes and heart disease, which is unfortunately too high here.
And does Silver City have any off-street bike paths? And if so, where are they?
No paved off-road, off-street paths. There are corridors, the riparian corridors that go up to the schools. Which riparian is that? Is that?
Silva, I believe.
Silva Creek, yeah. Yeah, there are trails going up to the school region up Silva Creek, and that's the only one I'm aware of. That's and south of town as well, along the Big Ditch.
And the draft bicycle route master plan references some roads that are problematic for anyone riding a bike. Where are these areas, and what's being done to help improve bike safety in those areas?
Well, like I say, Little Walnut has got a bike lane already on it. There is a lot of erosion on the hillside that brings dirt down, debris down on heavy rains and everything, but that's slowly being reduced as the hill stabilizes. Yeah, so the main arterials, you know, Little Walnut, Swan Street, Cottage Sand, you know, all of those are priorities to be able to deal with. Unfortunately, Highway 90 and 180, creates four sections of the town that are completely separate and not accessible from one area to the other for children or something. And so we really want to try and solve that issue because it's just too dangerous for even adults to, you know, sometimes don't feel comfortable going across the the roads unless, you know, there's a good crosswalk. And we do have good crosswalks now. I mean, you punch a button and you have time to be able to make it across the intersection, and that's really great.
So what could really be done to help improve that intersection for bicyclists?
An overpass would be a logical thing to be able to allow people and allow traffic to go on unimpeded. I believe that's one possibility. I don't, you know, I'm not a traffic planner. I don't know a whole lot about the various options, but that would be one.
Well, it seems to make sense.
Another road that has been under investigation for upgrading is New Mexico 15, which is PA Road, and their Department of Transportation has developed plans for upgrading that road between 180 and 32nd Street. And a number of community members, as well as the town, supported the fact that they should have a bike lane on that road also when they redo it.
And how far up would they want to do the bike lane up to?
It would be all the way up to 32nd Street.
All the way up to 32nd Street.
So that's about 2 miles, 3 miles.
Yeah, I do commute by bicycle. And when our office used to be in the old county
conference center.
The conference center out by Ace Hardware. And I used to, you know, come down PA Road periodically as part of my commuting. And it is a very narrow, there's just no space to be. You just need to share it with vehicles. And
well, I do want to mention that this bicycle master plan is not done yet. We just applied for funding through and got a partial funding. We got like 25% of what we asked for. And the town manager said, go ahead and accept that. And we don't have the contract yet with the New Mexico Finance Authority. Once we get that contract, then we'll see when the town can pitch in the additional money that we need, and we'll hire a person to do this master plan. So this is just all in the planning stages.
Like everything, right? But do you have a sense on when that contract might be awarded? Any?
We're talking about the government here. I really don't want to venture to say.
Fair enough. You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. We'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer. I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we've been talking with the kind folks at the Office of Sustainability, Denise Smith, Terry Timmy, and Mike Sauber. Welcome back to the program, and thank you for taking some time out of this morning to appear on Earth Matters. We really appreciate it. We've been talking a little bit about, master bicycling plan, community forestry, all this great stuff you guys are doing. I want to stick with you, Mike, just a little bit longer. We talked a little bit about some solar PV at Gabby Well. Could we get a little bit more details on that? Is Gabby Well one of the town's water sources? You know, where is it and what's planned for this well?
Yeah, Gabby has been a significant portion of our water, provided water for the town in the past. It's just off of Highway 90, just immediately north of the Tyrone turnoff. And a year or two years ago, maybe, the well was re-drilled because it had shifted a little bit and had some problems. So they re-drilled the well a little bit deeper, and now it is a very beautifully copious well, providing lots of water, double of what it used to have. We got hit a really nice pocket there of the aquifer, and there's hardly any drawdown to speak of. So we're talking 1,200 gallons per minute.
Wow.
Imagine taking a 5-gallon bucket, you know, up a set of stairs 10 feet or something, how, you know, the kind of energy that takes. That's the situation with water and what they call the water energy nexus. It requires a lot of energy to pump water and to treat water for municipal needs. And it takes water to create electricity the way we're currently doing it at power plants for cooling the power plants. There's enormous amounts of water being used to cool the heated steam to produce the power. So anyway, the Gabby Well at 1,200 gallons a minute is our single biggest well. And if we were this is not a project that has been done yet. We're just in the very early stage. We've been thinking of this for 4 years, and we're just kind of revisiting the concept right now, and it's still very viable to do that with photovoltaic. And by pumping Gabby during the daytime, if we have a photovoltaic array there, we use the photovoltaic energy during the daytime, and that would allow the rest of the well fields to produce at night and pump at night, which would save the town extra money by not having to pump during peak times when right. the energy is a lot more expensive. So this is going to be a pretty economical project as well.
Now, are there other – I'm pretty sure there's other solar panels like on buildings and other places in town. I know that there's one over at the visitor center, I believe, above the little carport there. Now, wasn't there also another large solar installation on some building maybe a year or 2 years ago that occurred? Or am I thinking of the same thing?
Not any municipal buildings.
No.
The problem with any photovoltaic going on a roof, you need to have the roof last longer than the – or at least as long as the photovoltaic panels. And they last 20, 25 years easily without any problem. And so until you are ready to redo a roof completely and know that it's going to last a long time, you don't want to put on PV panels and then have in right. 15 years, 10 years, 5 years, remove the panels, all that labor and everything in order to redo the roof. So so as we redo roofs in town, we will consider photovoltaic electricity on those buildings.
Are there any top candidates that you sort of stick out in your mind that could be great place to have some photovoltaics?
We have looked at 4 buildings, and a few of them have more promise than others. You know, the community development building right now is one of the high energy users, and so is the police and fire department there on Hudson Street. They both use, you know, that's 24 hours a day, you know, for the police and fire department there. So they've got a steady load throughout the day, and that's good.
So in terms of also monitoring energy use in town buildings, can you tell us what buildings we're talking about that we're monitoring energy use and why it's important to monitor energy use in those buildings?
Basically, we're monitoring the energy use of all of the buildings. And there are changes that take place in management or whatever, like next door to the museum. Now the museum annex is getting more use than it used to. And it's solely electric heat in that. There is no gas
is that
at
right?
that building. Yeah, so anyway, we're monitoring all the buildings, and this will help anyone who, if we come in and get real serious energy audits on some of the buildings, this would be a good basis for determining what the buildings need.
So you just said electric heat, and I'm kind of wondering, what are some other ways that the town could save energy and money in these buildings?
We have done other things already, lighting projects by replacing older lamps with newer, more efficient lamps. There's significant savings in that. Just, you know, tightening up the buildings, you know, air tightness helps. As air conditioning systems, HVAC systems go down, they're being replaced with more energy efficient ones. And if you have a really old heating system, you know, there are leaks in the system, and they're just not designed as efficiently as they are now. So as old heating systems go down and they're replaced with newer ones, we're saving a fair amount of money.
Now, that the energy efficiency for the town buildings, was that related to that grant that we mentioned at the top of the program where it was 800 houses or whatever?
That was separate? That was completely separate. That was money meant for individual homeowners and renters in the town, in the Grant County. And whereas right now we're focusing on just strictly town buildings. And one of the things I wanted to point out, Mike didn't mention, is, you know, one of the easiest things that people can do is, both in, you know, businesses and residences, is to just look around at their building and see if they have air leaks. Mike was out at the Silver City Rec Center, and one of the doors out there had like an inch gap. So all of the heat they were, you know, trying to heat it with was escaping outwards. And so, you know, just by making a few corrections, he was able to help the rec center with their heating bills.
Just simple, basic stuff.
Simple, basic things.
And actually, it was more than an inch.
More than an inch.
2 or 3 inches wide and 18 feet wide. So, yeah. 3 inches times 18 feet is a huge amount of air movement past an old ancient roll-up metal door.
Yeah.
And so we put some brush seals on there to allow the door to go up and down without air passing by it.
I'm also curious, do you guys have the opportunity to get more grants to do similar things for businesses and for homes?
We're always on the lookout for those, yes. And we also have a lot of information in our office that we encourage people to stop by, that they can pick up brochures that we've developed or that are commercially developed to help save energy. Another energy-saving thing that we've been involved in is distribution of compact fluorescent light bulbs. And PNM provided us with about 2,000 compact fluorescent light bulbs that we've handed out to the community. So we've been trying to, even though we don't have a grant to do it, we're still active in trying to find ways to help the community as well as businesses.
Do you still have any of those light bulbs left?
We gave them all out. They go pretty fast, yeah.
That's great. And just, you said that people could come by your office again. Just let our listeners know again where you guys are located.
It's 1106 North Pope Street. Many people know it as the former Shamrock gas station, but it's not going to look like that forever.
Yeah,
but it always will have a gas pump on it.
But this, in the future, we'll have like trees painted on it with foliage everywhere. Right, Denise?
That's right.
Well, Terry, one thing I really wanted to get to you on was the implementation of the plastic ban, the bag ban. When I heard about that, I was like, wow, Silver City's getting rid of plastic bags. That's fantastic. And then I went into a gas station and they still had a plastic bag. And I was like, wait a minute, I thought you guys were supposed to be having these. And well, they told me that they were allowed to use what they had, get rid of what they had. That way they didn't just throw them away, I suppose. But then I've also seen these plastic bags that are sort of more durable, thicker. I assume that they are letting them use that because they seem reusable and they don't look like they would tear as easily. Can you just tell us a little bit about how the plastic bag ban got into effect, how you guys got there, what it took to get there, and how you see it moving forward?
Certainly. The history of it goes back even before the founding of our office.
Wow.
Our office was founded based on grants, as Denise mentioned. And those were written by the what was at the time called the Mayor's Climate Action Committee. And they came up with a number of approaches to reduce greenhouse gases, looking at what the town could do to reduce, you know, the emission of greenhouse gases in the community. And one of those facts that they found was that by eliminating plastic bags, that would help reduce greenhouse gases. But, you know, they wrote that up and the town adopted it as a goal. But it wasn't until about a year ago that the Recycling Advisory Committee also took up the banner of trying to get the town to adopt an ordinance eliminating plastic bag use. And we worked extensively, both the office and the Recycling Advisory Committee, with Councillor Cynthia Bettison, who championed the ordinance to ban plastic bags. And the ordinance is written so that it does allow a certain thickness of bags, technically greater than 2.25 mils, which is a thousandth of an inch. And so these are heavyweight bags that can be reused in many times, like 100, the ones that are being used say they can last over 100 uses. And so, you know, that's why we allow those, whereas the thin bags that the box stores used to use, the single-use bags, many of them tear before you enter your first use.
Right. You get it right from the store, so you tear it open.
Yeah.
So what kind of outreach has been done to the town, from the town to the public, to sort of educate them on the importance of this and sort of tell them this is why we need to do this, and how are people reacting to it?
I've been really amazed at how much positive response we've gotten to this. The ordinance was first reading was back in July of last year, and then it was actually went into effect in January of this year. And in the intervening time, I went to every business in town to explain to them what the ordinance involved and what they would need to do. And, you know, there's over, 200 businesses in Silver City, and over 90% of them were very positive or, thought it was a good idea. There were some that were not happy about it, of course, but, it seemed to be the biggest response was that they were glad to see it happening. And the reason, one of the biggest reasons for the ordinance was to control litter. Everybody, I've talked to said, oh, yeah, I hate seeing all the plastic bags blowing around the countryside. And, one of the biggest areas where it was a problem was out at the landfill. People, they just throw their bag in the trash even when it doesn't have anything in it. And then they'd blow off of the landfill and across the country. And, the landfill was being threatened by the Environment Department with fines for not controlling the litter because they have to, not have a landfill just, blowing stuff all over the countryside. So that was the primary purpose for the ordinance, but it's also had some other beneficial effects in that, we think, as I mentioned, the greenhouse gas reduction will be important. And then I think it's a nice statement that, people will see that Silver City is, advanced in thinking about how they handle trash and
waste. Yeah,
absolutely.
And then I also saw that the when I went to go pay my water bill back in January, they gave me a free like tote bag.
Yes.
Was that sort of in conjunction with you guys too?
That was we were the involved in implementing that. It was actually the town council approved funds to buy that, and then P&M contributed funds also to buy over 7,000 reusable bags.
Wow.
And then the Recycling Advisory Committee made designs to go on the bags. But, we were scratching our heads at first thinking, how are we going to give away 7,000 bags? But it turned out that I had a lot of help from the community, some community service people through both the Workforce Connections and Juvenile Probation and Parole helped distribute bags to most of the households. And then also we had Girl Scouts handing out the bags at both at Walmart and at the Tamal Fiesta. We're down now to less than 100 bags left.
Really? Less than 100 bags in like 2 months?
In 2 months,
you got rid of 7,000 bags.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And now the big thing is, I'm seeing people actually using them when they go to the store, which is what we really wanted to see happen.
Right.
And in fact, just sitting here during our interview today, I've seen a number of people go by with bags, as they head into the co-op, taking their own bags. So, I think the town's, getting on board with reusing bags, which is the best thing in the world to happen.
I agree. You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. We'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we've been talking with the wonderful folks from the Office of Sustainability, Denise Smith, Terry Timmy, and Mike Sauber. Welcome back, you guys, for our final segment of the show. And we just sort of touched on the plastic bag ban, and you mentioned something about a landfill, Mike, a little earlier, and I hear that you're working on developing an area at the landfill that will be for reusable items, sort of in conjunction with the ReStore. What is this all about, and how will that work?
Yes, actually what we've been doing, again, this is a collaboration that we've established through the Juvenile Probation and Parole Office, and we've done a number of surveys out at the landfill of as people enter the landfill, what do they recycle and would they like to see a reuse area where they can drop off stuff? Because as you know, the ReStore, which is located on Market Street, is a tremendous resource for the community. But not everybody, wants to make two trips. They want to go, just get in their car and go straight to the landfill. And so what we thought might be a convenient way for them to have a drop-off location at the landfill where people could, leave building materials or, anything that the ReStore would normally take. Another good thing they could drop off would be furniture, as long as it's not particle board or, you know, doors, other types of things that other people can reuse. And so we're working at getting permission from the Environment Department to set that up. And initially, the way we'll work it is just do it. We go out to the landfill one Saturday a month, usually the third Saturday of the month, with JPPO kids. And they'll help us out initially, and then we'll eventually evolve the system into a weekly pickup where people can drop stuff off on some trailers we'll set up out there that the ReStore will then take back to their location. And we anticipate that it'll be manned so that, you know, there will be somebody there to say, okay, this is something we can really use, so that it wouldn't be, you know, people are just dropping stuff off and then it gets hauled to the ReStore and they can't use it, and then it gets hauled back to the landfill.
So what type of items does the ReStore want or need?
Any sort of building material, things like lumber, sheetrock, you know, if it's in, you know, a fairly good size piece of sheetrock, they're doing a little repair project, they just need a little piece, they can go to the ReStore and buy that rather than having to go by a 4-foot by 8-foot piece of sheetrock.
Right. So,
which you can't even take in your vehicle very easily.
Unless you got a big pickup truck.
Yeah. In addition to building materials, I think, you know, there are a lot of people rely on the ReStore for picking up furniture items that are in good shape. You know, usually the ones made out of particle board are not very usable. They tend to, you know, get broken and they're not repairable. So, but other solid wood furniture is welcome at the ReStore. So that would be the types of items that would be at the we'd have at the drop-off area also.
Okay. A big event that's coming up that I'm also wanting to get involved in is the planning for Earth Day 2015 on April 18th this year. Is that correct?
Correct. It's on April 18th. We've been doing Earth Day in this community for, gosh, I haven't kept track. This is like the 18th or 19th year that we've had an Earth Day festivity in the park. Originally, it started off in Penny Park, but now we have it in Goff Park because we need more room for it because it's such a phenomenal event. And the other thing we've been doing for about past 6 years is having a electronic waste collection in conjunction with Earth Day so that people can recycle all of their old electronic equipment. And first year we did that, we had like 5 tons of electronic waste collected. And as we've been doing it more and more, we're getting less because people's, you know, they're replacing all their old TVs and, you know, flat screens that last longer, but also because now people can drop off electronic waste anytime they want at the landfill. There's a location just before you, just right at the recycling center at the landfill, where people can drop off electronic waste. And if it's small items, they can even put it in their curbside bin.
Right.
So it's, you know, Earth Day, you know, we're still in the planning stages for who all is going to be there. We'll send out information, you know, a registration form probably in a month or so. But we encourage all, you know, nonprofits or community-oriented organizations to participate in Earth Day. And if they want more information, they can call me. My number is 519-8987, and I'll be happy to send them information about Earth Day.
Terry, would you mind repeating that number again?
Sure, 519-8987.
And that's for Earth Day, how to participate, get involved if you're a nonprofit, or just want to volunteer, I would assume.
Absolutely. Or if you need recycling information also. I get a lot of calls about, you know, can I recycle this or what do I do with that? So I'm happy to answer people's questions. Another interesting thing that we've got coming up in association with Earth Day is the evening before, on the 17th, we're going to have a showing of the film Wrenched.
Oh, great. That got confirmed.
Yes. So the film about Edward Abbey and the Monkey Wrench Gang will be at the Global Resource Center Auditorium at 6:30 on the 17th.
We should say that again. April 17th, the film Wrenched, about Ed Abbey and monkey wrenching, basically, is being shown at Western New Mexico University at the Global Resource Center. April 17th at what time?
6:30.
At 6:30. That's great to hear, because I know that Donna Stevens was working on trying to get that, and we just confirmed it live on the radio. You also promote recycling locally and at the state level through New Mexico Recycling Coalition. What is the Recycling Coalition doing to encourage higher recycling rates locally and at the state level?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about the New Mexico Recycling Coalition. It's an organization, a nonprofit made up of recycling professionals from around the state. There are 16 board members, of which I'm one of them. I'm the secretary of the organization, and just this last year undertook an initiative based on a legislative action, a House memorial called House Memorial 51, that said the state should aim for 50% recycling rate by 2030. So we've held some stakeholder meetings to try to determine what's the best way to increase recycling throughout the state. And by and large, the way to get more recycling going around the state is getting better funding for programs. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest problems we have here, as well as every community has, is just, you know, having the infrastructure to do all the recycling that could occur and getting information out to communities about what can be recycled. And so we've been working on, particularly at the local level, developing brochures to tell people what can be recycled and how to get it ready, and how to set out your bins, what's the best way. And so that we're doing that through the Recycling Coalition for communities around the state, and then encouraging each individual community to also develop their own information about recycling. And then we're trying to increase the funding level for recycling. Most of the all the grants that are available for recycling in the state right now are funded by taxes on motor vehicle registrations. And so we'd like to be able to get that funding increased in the future.
And what percentage of New Mexico citizens currently participate in recycling programs in their communities? Do you know?
Here in Silver City, we have a recycling rate of about 25%. Others, there are some places where the recycling rate's a little bit higher. But we're one of the leaders in the state for recycling, making some great strides in Albuquerque right now, because they just adopted also the same type of recycling program that we have, the single stream recycling, where people can just throw everything right in one bin. And that's what we found, is the easier you make it for people, the more they're likely to recycle.
So you said that Silver City's at 25%, and the goal is to try to get to at least 50%?
At least 50%, and that's going to be challenging. So one of the big things that would help with that is to try and get organic waste recycled. So, there's a lot of wood chips and other, food waste that goes into the landfill, that if we could compost that, would go a great way to increasing our recycling rate. And that's one of the goals of our office. And we got a grant from the Recycling Coalition as part of the ERA funding that helped pay for some improvements at the recycling center. And we had to write a strategic plan as part of that. And that strategic plan says that, what we'll do to increase recycling even more is to try and include organic waste diversion in that. So that's on our project list of things to do.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes left in the show. Is there anything that I missed or that you guys want to touch on or share with our listeners before we sign off?
I'd just like to mention our building, the HVAC system, went down about a week and a half ago, and so the building has been freezing. But interestingly, from my perspective, is that this building wouldn't be freezing if it was rotated 90 degrees. It has a lot of glass, but that glass is facing east. So in the very end of the day, we have some heat in there. But if it was facing south, passive solar, it's called passive solar. If you have a slab floor and you have glass facing south, it's pretty crazy not to ignore the fact that the sun comes up and is sunny 80% of the time here, better than any other place in the United States.
Just want to encourage everybody, feel free to stop by our office anytime. We're 1106 North Pope. And also another place I forgot to mention that we're going to be holding a recycling event is this coming Saturday at the 614 Bullard Building for the co-op as part of their artisan market. This Saturday.
What time that starts at?
10 o'clock to 4 o'clock.
Okay.
And we'll collect electronics at that location also.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much, Denise, Terry, Mike, for coming on Earth Matters today. It's been a real treat.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. And many thanks to Kyle Johnson, our technical engineer and all-around radio guru. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for your community support and dedication. This is what community radio looks like and sounds like. Have a great day, everyone.